I'm Kit Metlin. I'm 72. As of Pearl Harbor Day, I'll be 73.
Wow. So we'll start off with the easy questions. What kind of student were you in high school? Were you a straight-A student? Did you play a lot of sports? Were you a nerd?
I was good enough student. Mostly B's, few A's, a few C's. Ended up with a 3.65 or something, which placed me in the top of the class of nine at Unity and about fifth in the class of 20 in Winthrop.
You had nine kids in your graduating class?
Yeah.
So my next question, so where did you go to high school?
Well, I went two places.
Okay.
I started off in the first 2 years at Winthrop, and the last 2 years were at Unity.
I don't know where those are. What state is that?
Winthrop is north central Washington, north of Wenatchee.
Okay.
Out west of Spokane, and Unity is in a triangle between Baker and John Day and Vail.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In Oregon.
So you've grown up, you spent most of your formative years in the Pacific Northwest?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Did you get into trouble as a kid? Were you a troublemaker?
Depends upon who you talk to, I suppose.
Do you think if we asked your parents, would they have said you were a troublemaker?
Oh, I think Kim was a better one than me.
Yeah. So actually, that's my next question. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. So tell me about your siblings, because I don't know anything about your family.
There were three of us. We're 18 months apart. I'm the eldest. And then along came Kim, the middle one, and Scott, the youngest. And now I am the smallest.
So there's a Kit and there's a Kim, both in your family?
Yes, there was going to be a Kirk, but they were already having problems with the Ks.
Oh, I see. I don't even know. Is Kit your full name?
No, Kit Andrew Metlin is my full name.
But I mean, is Kit your full first name? It's not Kitteridge, or I don't even know what Kit would be short for.
No, it's not. I've met some Christophers and Christines and some others that are short for Kit or long for Kit. But okay. My name is three letters.
My cousin's name is Rick, and when he was born, my uncle was getting all kinds of congratulations on Richard, congratulations on Richard, and he had to shut them all down. He's like, no, it's just Rick. There's no any of that. So,
mm-hmm.
So you had two siblings, you said, and they're about 18 months apart after you?
Yeah.
And were you close to them as kids?
Our parents deliberately had three so that we would have somebody to play with, because they were planning to live where few other people lived, and they succeeded in that.
Oh, interesting.
So we played together and fought together and did things together.
So which sibling would you say you were closest to?
Probably Kim, the one closest to me in age.
Just because of the age?
Well, and he's a lot more outgoing. And he contacts us, so there's no avoiding him.
What did your parents do, Kit?
They met shortly after the end of Second World War at Idaho State in Pocatello. My mom was going into forestry, and there were two schools in the United States that would take women into the program, and she met the forestry president, forestry club president, and snared him. And then he ended up, they could only afford to send one to school, so they went to Idaho State and got a degree in forestry and range management. And he started off working for the federal government and stayed with the U.S. Forest Service until his retirement in his middle 50s.
So both of your parents had jobs related to the outdoors, it sounds like?
No, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She would occasionally substitute at the different schools we were at, but mostly she was home rounding us up.
I thought you said she had a job in the Forest Service, or did I mishear you?
My dad had a job in the Forest Service.
Gotcha. So your mom was a stay-at-home mom, and he worked in the Forest Service for... Do you spend most of his adult life in the Forest Service?
Yes.
And is that what, I would say, sparked your interest in the outdoors, I would say? Because I think it's well known that you're kind of an outdoorsy guy.
Well, I think more that we lived in that kind of environment than what he was doing. We had no idea what he was doing. He got to go for horseback rides for weeks at a time, and we were envious of that. We were left in the valley most of the time. They would take one of us on a trip, so we generally got one trip with our dad each summer for quite a few summers.
Was he home, or was he working like out in the forest for weeks?
He was working. He had the last GS-9 district in the Pacific Northwest, and it was a preponderance of wilderness area. So he spent a lot of time checking on his crews, his lookouts, his guard stations, scattered all over the place, but you got there by walking or horseback, and he wasn't going to walk. He liked horses.
So it's not a 9-to-5 job then, clearly.
No. It's beginning at daylight and ending at daylight.
Wow. So would you say you were interested in the outdoors as a young kid, or is that something that happened in your teenage years? Or?
It was there all along.
Yeah. So do you think, because in Ryan's interview, he talked about growing up near the forest and that being a big part of his childhood. So when you guys were looking for a house, was that part of the process of what you guys were looking for? Was something that was outdoorsy so you could have that for your kids?
So we chose a place where I could bicycle to work in any of about three places that the Department of Natural Resources had offices. And we looked a long time for a house that didn't have trees over the top of it, and finally settled on a place that had horse trails. So our 122 lots have horse trails or walking trails behind most of them, and that's what we liked, that for our sons to be able to run wild out in the woods.
Sure.
The lots were not all built up. We were about somewhere between the 5th and 10th house out of 122 that were eventually built.
So how old were your kids when you moved in there?
First grade and before first grade.
Okay.
And six, Merrill says.
So they were still pretty young. Okay, so that's perfect age for that. Cool.
Right.
Did you, well, I guess that's another good question. Have you listened to any of the podcasts?
Yeah.
Did you listen to Ryan's?
Yeah.
Did anything Ryan say surprise you?
Not in particular.
No? Okay. You never know how much parents know what their kids are doing or not. I'm just curious.
Oh, and we're still curious. We're sure that there's still stories lurking, but you don't know.
Yeah, right. Or maybe you don't want to know.
Oh, no, they're always good to know.
I mean, yeah, at this point, it's so many years in the past, right? So Ryan talked about getting in trouble as a kid. Is there a story that stands out to you, that one of the times one of your kids got up to some mischief that would make a good story?
Well, the DNR had several skiers who were ski patrolmen or ski teachers and ski instructors, and we would plan a trip for close to a week someplace else other than in the Pacific, but right here in the Puget Sound. And so often we chose to go to Canada, and I told the boys if they kept their grades up, they could go with us. So this is a typical thing for Ryan, is that he hated math, and he chose to not inform us that he was doing poorly in math. And so I just didn't learn until just before we were headed off to one of the resorts in British Columbia, when he let us know that his grades were bad. And I contemplated making him stay home, but he promised that when we came home, he would bring his grades up. So we decided to take him along, and we had a heck of a good time. And he came home and did take care of his grades. He got together with other kids, and they figured out how to work their way through the math systems that they were being taught. So he was in trouble, but we were willing to let him see what would happen.
I was talking to, I think it was it Amy? I can't remember. We were talking about, it's a totally different world now. Like, I can email my kids' teachers like 24/7. I can see my kids' grades like up to yesterday at any given time. So like, there's no secrets. Like, Angie used to tell stories about skipping school and then trying to catch the, you know, the call when the school calls to say that your kid wasn't there. Like, there is none of that now. Like, if Gabe misses one class, like, I get a text message like 45 minutes later. So it's a different world. There's no secrets anymore.
No, they're pretty much available to you now.
Which is good. I mean, it makes it really easy to keep up on your kid, you know, your kid's studies or whatever. It's not like you have to wait till the end of the semester to figure out your kid's failing something. So, but I did hear several stories about that, about trying to sneak school things past your parents, but it wouldn't work anymore.
An illustrative story for Joel is, we were in scouts, and I was acting as scout master, and we decided that we wanted to do a 100-mile canoe trip through the San Juans. That's north of Seattle. And they had to work as pairs and be buddies. And what the second, no, it was the first night out, Joel decides that he's done eating, and he hops in his kayak, and he wanders off out into the straits all by himself. And so pretty soon we notice that he's missing, and we're kind of curious where he might be. And somebody finally looks out in the middle of the strait out there, about a half a mile out, and there's Joel just paddling along, holding his place against the tide, which runs about 12 knots through there, which means that it's flowing as fast as any river, but you just don't see that.
Right.
So he finally came in, and we had a discussion about the example that he was setting. He didn't happen to have his partner with him, and he hadn't told anybody where he was. And he did a good job the rest of that trip, setting a better example. But that's another one where Joel just decides that he's ready to go do something, and off he went.
I get a kid like that. How old was Joel at that time?
Oh, he must have been 14, 15.
Yeah, that sounds about the right age for that kind of thinking. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
So were you a Boy Scout as a kid, Kit?
I was.
Were you an Eagle Scout?
Well, you don't get rid of it. You're stuck with it if you become one.
Well, that's true. Are you an Eagle Scout?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Good for you. Because I know both your kids are. We are discussing that. So Gabe is right at the end. He's very close. So
yeah.
Let's see. Which one of your kids would you say gave you the most gray hair? Like, which one stressed you out the most parenting?
Oh, I don't think either of them were very successful at that. Maybe okay. Losing the hair, but not turning it color.
Okay. As growing up, what's your favorite memory of your kids? Did you guys have a family tradition or a favorite meal, or I don't know, like a TV show you guys would always watch or something like that? Is there anything that stands out you and your kids did?
Not for me, not in particular. Because I was a ski patrolman, we spent a lot of time on the mountain skiing and patrolling. Oh, and Merrill points out that we went to Norway, and that might have been one of the highlights, because when I was in tree improvement, I was given a program to grow fast-growing straight trees, and I was supposed to be picking up several million dollars to make that operate, and it didn't work. So suddenly I didn't have any people, but I still had the obligations to try to reach some objectives. So I figured out how to get Norwegians to come and work for me for 6 months at a time for free. I would give them some housing and I'd give them a car that I wasn't supposed to. And they would work for me and work for a couple of other outfits that I had high confidence in would teach them some things. So when I moved out of that program, we decided to go visit all of them at their home places in Norway. And the boys were absolutely great every place we stopped until we got in the car, and then they would take out their having to be good all the time on each other for about 2 hours, and then they would calm down and they'd be good for the next place wherever we were going. But it was a really superb trip, and they both remember that trip.
How long were you in Norway?
What's that?
How long were you in Norway?
3 weeks or better.
Oh, wow. That's a long time. How old were the kids?
Yeah. Oh, Meryl knows things like that. How old were they, Meryl?
I think Joel was 9 and Ryan was...
9 and 12, probably.
Oh, those are formative years. That's a cool trip when you're that age, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We rented a car, and we drove some neat windy roads with cliffs on one side and hardly any place to pass anybody. And I think we went through 21 tunnels one day because each little fjord has its own tunnel to get over to the next one.
So you did Boy Scouts with both of your boys. Do you have, I assume you have fond memories of doing scouting stuff with your kids?
Yeah, it was a good time. We made it something where they had a lot of responsibilities. Scouting is supposed to enable them to gain responsibility and learn how to lead, and they both shone at that. They were excellent senior patrol leaders.
Yeah, I always tell people that Boy Scouts is a leadership program disguised as a camping program. Like you said, the goal is to get kids to be leaders, and yeah, for sure.
So when I quit being a leader for that particular troop, we had something like 20 Eagles that we got out of that group. And the way we did that was we had an outing every month except in December. And then at every meeting, we put up this chart, and it shows all the advancement things that they have to do for each advancement. And that really paid off. People were advancing in spite of themselves.
Cool. What? Let's see. So my next question is, what was your favorite family vacation? But would it be safe to say that was the trip to Norway?
Well, I think that was right there at the top.
That seems like kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime trips. It's hard to say no to that, I would imagine.
Yep, that's a fact.
Oh, hey, you mentioned it earlier. I forgot to – you said – did you guys did a 100-mile canoe trip, you said?
Yeah.
How long did it take? How many days did it take you to do 100 miles?
We took a week to do that, and partially that's because for a 50-miler award, which you can do either afloat or on your feet, we decided it's really easy to do 50 miles in a canoe, unless the wind's against you or whatever. So we decided that to make it close to the same amount of effort, we would do 100 miles. And we decided, and I think the rules for a 50-miler were that you had to do it in a week. You weren't supposed to speed through it or get real slow.
I think it's 5 days, but yeah, I think it's across several days.
Yes. So that's what we ensured that we stayed longer and we put in more distance.
So for the listeners that aren't familiar, I believe there's three major awards that you can get in Boy Scouts. One is for a 50-mile float, a canoe trip or a kayak trip. One is for a 100-mile bike ride, which I believe has to be done over the course of 2 days or 24 hours. I can't remember. And then the last one is to do, I think it's 50 miles of hiking across 5 days, something like that. I forget. They're all really hard to do. So 100 miles in a canoe is, I mean, even with the current, you're still going to be putting in time. That's cool. Good guy. Good for you. Did both?
Well, they didn't have current there. They were in the ocean on that particular one. Okay. The current was, there was some current, but the big issue on the ocean was wind.
Okay. Because we did a 38-mile canoe trip in like 2.5 days, you know, depending on the currents. It's
right.
Like you said, yeah. It's not that hard to do in a canoe. It's
right.
That's why they want you to spread it out across a couple of days. But that's cool. So did both your boys do that?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
We tried to do a 50-miler about every 2 or 3 years apart.
Yeah.
So we did one down the Snake River in a canoes. We did one down the Skagit River in canoes. We did the San Juans in canoes. And then I didn't really want to go for any hikes, but some of the assistants really liked that. So we interspersed those with hikes.
Cool. Did your boys get the hiking merit badge with the 20-mile hike that's required?
Oh, yes.
Both of my kids did the 20-mile hike, but I couldn't do it. That's a lot of walking. I mean, that's like a solid 8 hours of walking, and that'll wear you out.
So my brothers and I were interested in getting one of these neat badges, their awards, and they were made out of leather, stamped leather. They were really nice looking. So we three boys needed one of those. So our parents said, well, we know where you can go. So they tossed us out at Slate Peak up on the Cascade Crest Trail and told us to come home in about a week. Whoa. So we went traipsing off. I was 14, 13, and 11 were our ages. And we went traipsing off by ourselves. We got caught in a rainstorm and got hypothermia, but we found a sheep herder who fed us coffee, he called it, but it was mostly sugar with a little blackening in it. And that was good enough for us to make up camp and survive the night. And then our last day out, we decided that we were tired of just monkeying around, and we chose a 22-mile hike back out to civilization in that one day, over hill and dale.
And then
when we got done, we couldn't get our award because we didn't take an adult along.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah. So we had to do it again later that fall.
Huh.
With an adult.
So one of the questions that someone asked me to ask you about was is cabin the right word? I mean, I've seen pictures on Facebook of that cabin that you built. Can you tell the story about that? Is cabin the right word?
Cabin is the right word.
Can you tell the story about the cabin?
This is a perfect example of Kim being an instigator and wanting to have things happen and having the wherewithal to keep bugging people until they finally give up. So our dad finally said, oh, okay, you can build a cabin. We'd been building forts all over the station where we lived at the time, but none of them were real. They were made for little people to crawl in and out of. We wanted a real one. So our dad finally said, you can have all the poles on the station you can get that are less than 12 inches in diameter. Well, when you got to looking around on the station, there were about a dozen of them, and you need a lot more than a dozen to build a cabin. So we took those and we started the cabin. And he said it could only be, I think it was 12 by 14. Any bigger than that, it was official building, and you couldn't do that on a Forest Service station. So we started this thing up. We put it on some rocks so it was up off the ground, and we got about 2 feet up, and we ran out of logs. Well, now we were disgusted because we wanted a real cabin. So some way or another, our dad figured out that there was some thinning going on down the way where we got our milk, 2 miles away. So sure enough, these happened to be just the right size for our little cabin. So we got some horses, and we had, the family had horses. So we took the horses down to the trees, that were down on the ground and cut the logs to the right size and then hauled them back to the station with the horses. And finally, we got our walls up and everything, and now we were waiting for a roof. We needed some shakes. Well, during that spring, a tree, a red cedar, had fallen into Early Winter's Creek, and they needed it moved out because it was interfering with the input or the intake to the water for the station. Our water came from a creek. And so they cut the shake blocks to the size we wanted, and we wanted them 16 inches long, except for one set that would be 18 inches long, or 24 inches and 16 inches. That's the sizes that we wanted. And then we split those up.
How old are you when you're building this?
15 for me. So 15, 14, and probably 11 or 12.
So that's a really ambitious project for a 14 and 15-year-old. Did you have any experience? How do you? I mean, I know what I was doing when I was 15, and it was not building cabins. Like, I wouldn't have known where to start.
Well, we've been opening trails with axes. In fact, that was my Eagle project, was to open a trail, take my horse, take an axe, and go open up some trails. So we were very good with the tools that you need for that kind of thing. And our parents had faith that we would figure out how to get the logs up there using the horses, et cetera. So we split the shakes and we put them on and we made a steep roof on it. We wanted the snow to slide off of there because at that location, you get between 3 and 6 feet of snow during the winter. And we put a long overhang over the front and the back so that we could store wood and keep it out of the snow, and the front so you could get in the door without shoveling. And it worked. The door is made out of old road and trail signs that were white, painted white with black lettering. And the Forest Service decided those weren't rustic enough. So they ripped them all out and they put in brown ones with white lettering out of cedar. And so they were going to burn up all these things. And Kim again says, boy, those look like nice door boards. And sure enough, they turned out to be such. So in 65, we finished that.
So, I think I saw pictures not too long ago. I mean, the cabin is still there, right?
It is. It's still there. It doesn't leak. The roof is steep enough that even if there are some holes, and you could always see holes, you could always see out through the shake roof because of the way they were laid in there. But it doesn't leak yet.
But, I mean, it's been there for, I'm doing the math in my head. I mean, that's been 50, 55 years. Wow, that's a long time. That's cool. Good for you guys.
Yeah, it's an antique now, and it's still not leaking.
Good for you.
We had a stove in it so that we could stay warm in the wintertime, and we spent nights in it.
Where'd you get the stove?
The Forest Service had one laying around that came out of an old trapper's cabin. So,
wow.
So we put a hole, and we didn't want to put a hole through our roof, so we put a hole in the end of the cabin and took the pipe out and then up at the end of the overhang. So there was a lot of pipe.
Does it have your name on? I mean, if somebody wanders across it, you know, does it say the...
Well, the lintel across the top of the door says Metlin, and carved into the one of the signs on the door is KM, KM, and SM. And then it says 65.
Oh, that's so cool.
So, wow. So our initials are carved into it and our last name.
Wow. Let's see. What's next on the list? What was your first real job after high school?
Well, I decided in 1968, the Tet Offensive was happening. And I came home from signing. The five boys in my class got in a car and drove over to Baker City and signed up for the draft. And on the way back, it was nothing but Tet Offensive news. I got home and I said to my dad that, you know, it's I may as well just go join the Army because we're not planning to win this at the rate we're going. We'll be there forever. And he says, nah, you need to go to school for couple of years and then rethink if you want to do that. So I signed up for forest management and range management, two separate degrees, thinking that I was never going to work on the west side and I'd work on the east side and it'd be outdoors. So I signed up for those. And then at Oregon State in forestry, you have to have 6 months of work in the forest in some manner or another. And so the first two summers out of high school, I bumped knots and set choker and did other things for a logging outfit outside of Unity. And then I went to the BLM for a year or for a summer, marking timber and setting cadastral survey lines.
Did you say cadastral?
Yeah, that means that you're using the sun to essentially set corners.
I love the new word today.
Property corners.
Huh, okay.
And then I went to Boise Cascade and marked timber for them. And then Merrill and I decided that we would get together and have some fun for a lifetime. And that meant that we suddenly were short on money. These jobs that I was taking with Boise and the BLM simply did not make enough money to send two of us to school. So my brothers and I formed Metland Brothers and took on contracting of pre-commercial thinning, fence building, anything we could get that we could have a limited time to do it in, meaning the summer. So we did that for two summers, and Merrill and I camped out in the woods during that time. So those were my first.
You didn't have an apartment or a house? You lived in the woods for a summer? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, when you're working in the woods, it's a lot cheaper to live near your job.
That's true.
So a tent is movable. We took it with us.
So let's skip ahead a little bit. What was your college experience like then? It sounds like you went to OSU, it sounds like.
Yep, I went to Oregon State, and that's where I met Merrill. And we lived in the same dorm. She was on one floor and I was on another. And she would sing down in the entryway and along with all these other people, and they had a great time, but it was fun to listen to him sing. And one day we had a rule that we couldn't have any pets. Well, hell, nobody had a pet, but they made that rule. So I asked Merrill if she'd like to go with me, and we'd collect some worms so I would have some pets instead of listening to that rule. So we went and dug worms. So that's part of the class of the time at school.
Wait. So you dug worms just to spite the rule? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's right.
You just had a pet worm.
And you know, they were very quiet. Nobody ever knew I had those pet worms.
All right. So, sorry, I'm just distracted by your pet worms. So you went to OSU, you met Merrill. Did you get a degree in forestry, I assume?
No, I got one in forest management and I got one in range management. And then I discovered in that last week that if I paid any attention, if I declared them, I would have had one in botany and one in soils. I would have had to take one more course in soils and one in animal science and one in general agriculture, because enough courses overlapped between forestry. It took me 5.25 years to earn these things.
Wow.
Nixon became my favorite president because as soon as I graduated, he said we were done with Vietnam. So I don't care if he's a crook. He did exactly what I needed.
Okay, so sure. Not a lot of people say Nixon's their favorite president, so.
No.
But I guess if he keeps you out of the war, that's a pretty good reason to like him.
Yeah, well, I had we had a lottery at that time, and I had drawn the number 12. I was a sure go if I ever graduated from college. And so I'd already had my physical, and I was graded prime material. And so I had this one holding card in my wallet. And when he declared that we were not going to continue the draft, I thought, this is darn right nice.
Wow. So let's see. Talked about, I'm going out of order here, so my notes are a little jumbled. I apologize. So let's see. We talked about your siblings.
Oh, and we should say that my grade level was less than it was in high school.
Oh, uh-oh. What happened?
It dropped a whole point. So instead of 2.365, I ended up with a 2.45 or something.
That's not because you met Merrill, is it?
No. It's because I learned from Brother Kim that you can go on, what is it? You can get less than a 2 point on one term as long as you make up for it on the next term. And so I learned that I didn't have to study for some of those courses that I really didn't like. And so I would get just enough to get through them. All you need is a D to pass. And then if you can get an A or a B, you can make up that difference and stay ahead of the 2 point that you need to get through school.
So for all the kids listening at home, the moral of the story is to get a D one term and then an A the next term. That's the message.
No. Just get enough to get through the courses you don't like.
Okay.
And then courses that you really do like, go ahead and put some energy into them.
Fair enough.
You can learn a lot that way.
Let's see. So this is a two-part question. Did you and your siblings, was there a sibling rivalry? Did you guys get along, or did you guys fight and pull pranks on each other, or how did that go? Sounds like you were pretty close.
We were pretty close, except when we decided that we didn't like whatever the other one was doing.
Yeah. But, I mean, you built a cabin together. I don't think I could put up with my brother long enough to build a whole cabin.
Well, you had to. Once you started it, you couldn't quit.
Yeah. Okay. Did your kids get along, or did they fight? I mean, you mentioned they fought in Norway a little bit, but is that?
No, they were generally very amiable with each other.
Okay.
I think you heard that Joel or Ryan had a close friend next door, and Joel tagged along and was with part of that group.
Yeah. How far apart are your kids again?
3 years.
Yeah, okay. That's about how far apart my kids are. Okay. Let's see. So I think we covered most of the stuff that I had on my list. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just reading my notes here. So the one thing that stands out, when I think Kit Metlin, the number one thing that pops into my head is the missing digit on your finger. And all the myriad of stories that I've heard about that missing finger. So actually my wife and I were discussing. So let me just in the brief amount of time that I've known you, you've told me, or at least I've heard. So let's just go down the list. I heard that you were in a canoe and you had your hand over the edge of the water and an alligator came on and bit it.
Yeah, that was hurt like mad.
And I've heard that you had it in your locker. Like you were leaning against your locker in high school and somebody came by and slammed your locker. I heard that.
Oh, that would hurt too. My goodness.
Yeah. And then there was some story. I'm trying to remember. There was some story about a roof or something. So I'm just curious. How many different stories have you told about your finger? And what's your favorite story?
Well, I don't know how many stories. They change from day to day.
Uh-huh.
And individual to individual, and how they might perceive the missing piece or the story about the missing piece. So I'm not sure how many stories there might be. I think I'm still building on them.
There's no end in sight.
No.
Okay. Do you want to go on the record for everyone and tell the real story, or you want to leave it a mystery?
Oh, I think it's better as a mystery.
As much as I want to hear the actual real story, I think it probably is better as a mystery.
Well, think of all the ways that I could have lost that thing.
Man, there's just so many.
And some of them, you know, most of the time I'm aware when I lost it. But, you know, I could have just gone to sleep and it could have been snatched. And I wasn't. Well, yeah.
I remember, I think I had just recently met you. It was like when Angie and I were just dating. And I don't remember how it came up. I think we were at Mark's having dinner or something. And somehow like the finger story came up and you told the alligator story like at dinner, like with 100% serious face. And I think I kind of like looked at my wife and I went, is this for real? Like, is he telling a real story? Like this is, cause you totally had me convinced cause you were so serious about it, but it was such an absurd story. So even as like a, you know, a young 25-year-old, you were still convincing. So. Cool. Are there any other stories or anything else that you think is worthy of telling while we're here?
Well,
anything I didn't ask you that you want to get off your chest?
One thing that is, you heard that Meryl went camping with me for a couple of summers.
I did hear that.
Yeah, and she's the one who was talking to her mom about choosing me to be her friend for the rest of her life. And her mom mentioned that we were awfully dissimilar, which we thought was highly amusing since she and Art were kind of dissimilar at that time in their lives.
Did you get along with her parents?
Yeah.
You sounded slightly hesitant.
Oh no, they're parents of a girl. You know, they have a vested interest in how she.
Okay. Right. Oh, hey, actually, that's a great thing. I forgot. My wife is messaging me, and you might have to call in Meryl on this one. She told me that there was one time where Angie and Joel were at your house, like a sleepover or something, and that they wrote on the walls in lipstick. Do you remember that?
Was it lipstick, Meryl?
No, it was lipstick.
It was chapstick. Okay. They didn't have that really good colorful stuff. They had something that had some sheen to it that you could see through. It was really pretty.
That's what you thought?
Yeah, and the walls were freshly painted. Man,
oh, great.
Man, it really stood out on the walls.
So you weren't mad. You were just like, oh, that's pretty.
Well, we probably weren't real pleased.
Did it come off?
Oh, yeah. 50 years later, you can't tell.
Yeah, you didn't have to repaint the whole wall or anything?
No, Meryl found something that at least dulled it and took the majority of it off.
Okay. Angie doesn't remember that, but she remembers her mom telling the story a lot. So, like, she feels guilty about it, like, because her mom would bring it up a lot, but she doesn't remember. So she'll feel better knowing that it wasn't horrendous.
Meryl said she was forgiven a long time ago. First off, you have to have a memory for it, and
yeah.
You know, there's been some others piled on since then.
Well, I'm sure Joel had a little hand
in it. Yeah, we're kind of certain that Joel might have had something to do with it.
Okay. All right.
Because he did color up our brand new Toyota wagon on the inside with crayon in that case.
Oh, good.
He also took a pen. He did it twice.
Oh, and then that wasn't good enough. He tried pen on the same material.
Oh, well, he's quite the artist then.
Well, yeah, it's turned out to be a fact. He is a good artist.
That's true. I guess it paid off then. That was probably like his first real art, right?
Yeah, we should have cut that.
The only thing that took it off the ballpoint pen out of the car was the sun.
Yeah, the sun is what finally did in the ballpoint pen.
So it was a small price to pay, a new car with some ballpoint pen on it, but it started his art career.
Right.
Okay. See, every cloud has a silver lining, Kit.
Yeah, no kidding.
let's see. I think that's it. I think that's all the stories I have. Anything else you wanna say before we sign off?
I was a good boy.
That sounds like it.
Yeah. Except maybe at the time that I shot the bus driver in the back of the head with a spit wad, that he didn't appreciate that.
Yeah, I imagine that wouldn't go over so well. How old were you?
Oh, I don't know. Our bus ride was 15 miles. It was an hour riding around with a bunch of other people that you could interact with. And another guy and I were shooting, and I was being really good, but I wasn't getting caught. The bus driver caught the other guy and moved him up behind him on the front seat. And I was so dang accurate, I was hitting him left and right with those spit wads, except the last one that curved and hit poor old Gordon Cerreri in the back of the head. The bus stopped immediately. He stood up. All the kids on the bus turned around and looked at me. So there was no doubt in his mind which person was going to ride on the step of the bus to school.
Oh, wow. They got sold out, huh?
It was easy. They didn't have to say anything. They just looked.
Just looked.
Yeah. All those eyeballs on me. So then I got to ride on the bus step. And at each step or stop, I would get out and the new person would get on. And then I would go sit on the step. And we did that for 10 of the 15 miles to school.
Wow.
And when I got out of school, I walked out of class and I went down towards the buses. And I thought, oh, damn, I'll bet I have to walk home. Because Kim has already proven that there are things you can do to walk home. He's done it twice already. 15 miles he's had to walk home.
You mean he got kicked off the bus?
Yeah, for various things.
Okay.
So I come to the step and he says, are you good? Gordon says, you going to be good? And I said, yeah. He let me on and I was a good boy. So I am capable of being a good boy. Yeah.
Okay.
I never shot him again.
Was it worth it?
What? Oh, well, not hitting him, but it was worth it with the other guy.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like the perfect story to end things on. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure this will be a great episode. I had a really good time.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. I will talk to you later, Kit. Have a good evening. Tell Meryl I said hello.
Yeah, okay. She can hear you. She said hello back.
All right. I'm going to go get my kid in bed. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.